woe, her arms thick and heavy. Her legs were already encased in the studded leggings that told Grant she'd been implanted with biochips. Her face was square, blocky, her deeply black hair obviously a wig cut in a short Dutch boy style with bangs that came down to where her eyebrows should be. The complexion of her face was a pasty gray, as if she hadn't seen sunlight or a UV lamp in many years. The expression on that face was granite hard, square jaw thrust out pugnaciously, pale blue eyes surveying all the faces turned toward her, peering at each individual in the room for a few seconds, and then turning to the next. She seemed to be saying, "I know you don't like me. The feeling is thoroughly mutual." Those accusing eyes focused on Grant for a moment, freezing him even though he wanted to turn away. At last, she turned her attention to the next person. Grant felt as if he'd just been freed from a police interrogation. "You," she said, pointing at Karlstad. "Me?" he asked, his voice squeaking slightly. "Karlstad," she said. "Yes." "You will join the crew. Prepare for the surgery immediately." Grant stared across the table at Karlstad. He looked like a man who had just seen his own death. Krebs. "Crystal Krebs," Frankovich said, hunching forward gloomily over the cafeteria table. "She's woe's ultimate revenge on us." Muzorawa nodded glumly. Even O'Hara looked worried. The four of them unconsciously leaned their heads together and whispered like conspirators. The cafeteria was only half-filled, yet echoing with the noise and clatter of other dinner conversations. Still, they whispered to one another. Frankovich was a short, roundish, balding man. Grant had seen the biochemist often enough in his days as a lab technician, but the man had hardly spoken six words to him before this. "What are they doing to Egon?" Grant asked. "What's the surgery that Krebs spoke of?" "Wiring the biochips into his legs," Muzorawa said. "And teaching him to breathe underwater," added Frankovich with a shudder. Grant had been told that the crew would be immersed in a thick perfluorocarbon liquid during the mission. It was the only way they could withstand the enormous pressures of the Jovian Ocean. They would be living in their own high-pressure liquid environment, breathing oxygen from the perfluorocarbon, hoping that the pressure inside the cells of their bodies could be raised high enough to balance the pressure outside their ship. It worked in theory. It worked in tests. During the first mission into Jupiter's ocean, though, one crew member had been killed and the others injured. Woe had never recovered from his mangling. Grant wondered if Krebs was fully recuperated. "Poor Egon," O'Hara said. "He was terrified of having this happen to him." "Couldn't he refuse?" Grant asked. "I mean, we've still got our legal rights." With a shake of his head, Muzorawa replied, "Egon doesn't. Technically, he's a convicted felon, serving out his sentence here." "That's why Krebs picked him. He can't refuse." "I'm just glad it wasn't me," Frankovich said fervently. "It's not that bad," said O'Hara. "Once you get over the surgery, once you're connected to the ship." "Connected?" Grant wondered aloud. "The biochips link you to the ship's systems," Muzorawa explained. "Instead of using keypads or voice commands, your nervous system and the ship's systems are directly linked." Grant felt his eyebrows hike up. "It's different," O'Hara said. "Sort of a feeling of power, you know. You feel the ship's machinery. You and the ship become one." Muzorawa nodded. "I've never experienced anything like it. It's..." He groped for a word. "Intimate," said O'Hara. "Yes, a sort of out-of-body experience, yet it's happening within your own skull." "Almost like sex," O'Hara said. "Better," said Muzorawa. "Better, is it?" she challenged. Muzorawa smiled knowingly. "It lasts longer." Grant changed the subject. But what about Krebs? Who is she? Where did she come from? She was on the first mission, Zeb answered. She was Woe's second in command. She actually piloted the mission craft, said O'Hara, and she got pretty badly smashed up in the accident. Some people claim she caused the accident, said Frankovich, and now Woe's put her in command. I thought she was at Cellini, Grant said. She was, O'Hara replied. Recuperating from the accident, don't you know? She must be fully recovered, Muzorawa offered. Frankovich shook his head. Physically, perhaps, but did you get a look at her eyes? Like a homicidal maniac? Neither Muzorawa nor O'Hara replied. Another question rose in Grant's mind. If you were linked with a submersible's system when the accident happened, what did it feel like? Did you feel pain? What? Muzorawa closed his eyes briefly. Lane and I were off duty when it happened. Thank the saints in heaven, O'Hara whispered. Jorge Levestra was killed. Krebs and Dr. Woe were badly injured. Frankovich hunched forward in his chair and clasped his hands on the tabletop. From what I hear, Levestra had just plugged into the ship's systems. He wasn't physically injured. He died of a cerebral hemorrhage. A stroke? Yes, that's true, said O'Hara. Being linked to the ship at the wrong time can be fatal. New assignments. Grant woke up the next morning, soaked in a cold sweat. His bedsheet twisted and tangled around his legs. Vaguely, he remembered a dream, a nightmare, about strangers pinning him down and slicing away his flesh with sharp scalpels while he struggled and screamed for mercy. It was early, he saw. He phoned Karlstad, but there was no answer. Recovering from his surgery, Grant guessed as he showered, then pulled on his slacks and shirt and headed for the cafeteria. It was nearly empty at this hour, although Red Devlin was laughing and chatting with a few of the early birds. He must sleep behind the counters, Grant thought. It wasn't until the next evening, at dinner, that he saw Karlstad again. Egon entered the cafeteria, walking uncertainly, his legs sheathed in the same kind of studded black leggings, wearing the same kind of turtleneck pullover that O'Hara and Muzorawa always wore, his head completely hairless. Grant left his half-finished dinner and rushed to Karlstad. Egon smiled half-heartedly as Grant came up to him. Well, he said shakily, I survived the surgery, at least. Are you all right? Instead of answering, Karlstad pulled down the collar of his turtleneck pullover. Meet Frankenstein's monster, he said. There were circular plastic gadgets inserted into either side of his neck. The skin around the things looked red, inflamed. What are those? Feeding ports. When we're in the soup, we can't eat regular food. We get fed intravenously. For how long? Letting the turtleneck collar slide back into place, Karlstad answered grimly, for as long as we're on the mission. My God, Grant muttered. I'll live through it, I think. Grant stayed with him as Karlstad selected a meager salad and a mug of fruit juice. The man tottered slightly as he walked back to Grant's table. Where's Laney and Zeb and the others? Karlstad said as he slowly, carefully sat down. Not here yet. Karlstad picked at his salad. Grant tried to finish his dinner, but had lost interest in eating. You want to know what it's like, don't you? Karlstad said, his voice flat, dead. I don't want to pry. Pry away, I don't mind. The worst is over. They sliced me up and put their damn chips into me, but first they drowned me. Drowned? It's all done underwater, or in that fucking perfluorocarbon gunk. It's like trying to breathe soup, freezing cold soup at that. Easier to prevent infection while they slice away at you, they claim. Karlstad spent the next quarter hour describing in horrendous detail everything they had done to him. Listening to him, Grant lost his last.